Community Cats podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats podcast. I am your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 20 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. Today, we're speaking with Jim Tedford. Jim has been actively engaged in the animal welfare movement for more than 33 years. He currently serves as president and CEO for the Association for Animal Welfare Advancement, formerly known as SAWA. It's a professional association of leaders in the field of animal welfare and animal care and control. Jim has been CEO for organizations in New York, Louisiana, and Tennessee. He served as a regional director for the Humane Society of the United States. Jim has presented at national and regional conferences on various animal welfare issues, organizational development, and not-for-profit management. Jim, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Thanks for having me, Stacey. Great to be back.
Wow. Well, we have so much great news to cover today. If folks are interested in finding out more about Jim, this is his second time on the show. So I'd like to let folks know he was also our episode number 199. So if folks want to go to the communitycatspodcast.com and just search 199 in the search bar, his episode will come up and you can find out more about his personal past and how he got involved in animal welfare. But today's show, which is episode number 263, we are focusing on the Association for Animal Welfare Advancement, which is a new name for SAWA. And so, Jim, maybe share with us today, what's going on?
Well, I tell you, Stacey, we are approaching our 50th anniversary as an association, which is really hard for me to believe as well. We were formed in 1970, so in a couple of years, we'll turn 50. And I've been around for a lot of that. I've been a member for over 30 years, so it's been a big part of my life and my career. What we sort of realized is, though, that the industry that we're such a part of and is such a part of us is evolving at a remarkable rate. There is so much happening all the time, and things are changing. The one thing that is constant in our field is change and evolution, and we thought we need to evolve along with it. Our old name, SAWA, the Society of Animal Welfare Administrators, really served us very, very well for the last 48 years. But we wanted a name and a brand that could really help advance us into the next 50 years and that would sort of carry us through that period of time and would help us sort of grow into the association that we want to continue to grow into. So we put together a group of folks probably, oh gosh, a year and a half ago almost now, a group of marketing and branding experts from the industry and from outside the industry to really talk about what do we need to do to make that evolution happen, and how can we come up with a new brand identity that's going to carry us over that next 50-year period. It was a bunch of really smart folks plus me sitting around a table really kind of talking through what a brand needs to do and how we can best make that happen. We concluded that with some really amazing focus groups. At our conference last fall, we brought together stakeholders from all different aspects of our work. We had sponsors and executive level members and veteran members and brand new members and folks who aren't even members yet but are sort of on the periphery thinking about becoming members. Brought a whole lot of different people together with different points of view and had some professionally led focus groups. And interestingly, all those groups led us to the exact same conclusion, the same word that we put out there really resonated. And we thought, you know, we don't really necessarily want to be a society anymore, because society kind of by definition represents a closed group. And we don't want to be a closed group. We really want to be as inclusive as we possibly can. There are so many different types of people and organizations at work making things happen for animals these days. And we thought, we don't want to just represent the executives from the top 10 markets around the country. We want to really have something for everybody. Anybody who aspires to lead in this field, we wanted to be able to offer them something of value that would help them advance their careers and hence really help advance the movement as a whole. So society was the first word that we got hung up on and wanted to really come up with a replacement. And association seemed like just the right word. And then the other word that really in our old name that really kind of we got stuck on was the word administrator. We really felt like that, you know, when SAWA was first formed nearly 50 years ago, that may have been a fairly accurate description of the work that most of our members were involved in. But we're not just administrators anymore. I think we have all evolved significantly beyond that. And, you know, when I hear administrator, I kind of, for better or worse, I kind of think DMV. That's not the image that I want us to conjure up in anybody's mind. So we thought what we're trying to do really is advance a movement. And so the word advancement really seemed much more apt to include in our name. So we came up with the Association for Animal Welfare Advancement, and it just rings true to everything that we stand for today and everything that I think that we will stand for even 50 years from now. The other thing I really love about it is when we were SAWA, we had a tagline. We always had to sort of maintain some kind of a tagline. And our most recent tagline was Leaders Committed to Excellence. I think when you say the Association for Animal Welfare Advancement, the tagline is there. We don't really even need an additional tagline. We don't need to tell people who we are or what we do or what we stand for. It's all in our name and in our brand identity. So we're really excited about the change and the direction. I will tell you, probably for the next 3 to 5 years, we'll all still be saying SAWA way too often, because it's first of all, it's just so familiar to folks who have been in the industry for a long time. What we're trying to do is not be an acronym anymore. We don't want to be AWA. Just because we dropped the society and changed our name a bit, we don't want to turn it to morph into AWA. So we're trying to brand ourselves as the association. And we did that for ourselves at our most recent conference back in June, and amazingly, it really caught on. And by the end of the conference, I had all manner of members and non-members attendees at the conference referring to our organization as the association. So for those of us who go back a ways, there was a band back in the day called the Association that recorded a lot of hits back in the 60s, and so fortunately, our field is getting younger instead of older, so most of our members don't even know who that is, so we don't have to worry about that confusion so much. So that's us. We are the association, and so when folks are planning to attend a conference, we hope instead of saying I'm going to SAWA, they'll say I'm going to the association.
Wow, that's great. It's excellent exercise for you to go through that, because I know I've personally been involved in quite a few conversations about organizations and branding and name changing and whether or not it's a good idea to do it or not. And it's a really hard challenge for boards to make a decision to take that leap. I don't know if you have any tips or advice since you've just gone through it. Was like, what was the tipping point that made you to say, okay, we've got to jump in the deep end and do this?
Yeah, I'm extremely fortunate in that I have a board made up of leaders from animal welfare, and so they all work for boards themselves, so they understand that dynamic really well, and because of that, they behave very professionally and very appropriately as a board, as a true governing body and a group of real visionaries who are helping to set the course for where we're going as an organization. One of the best things that happened in this whole process was from the very beginning, we approached it as we want to go through this exercise and we need to know sort of what are the parameters, what are our limits, what are the boundaries we can't cross. And our board agreed from the very outset that there were no sacred cows. There was nothing that was off the table and completely off limits for this brand analysis team that we put together. They could really go for broke and be as aggressive engaged and forward thinking as they want it to be without feeling limited by anything. Obviously, the board made the final decision once the recommendations came back from that team. But you know, as smart people do, and as strong boards and strong governing bodies do, they took the advice of the experts. And you know, without really any hesitation. Remarkably, when we did the vote for making the name change and doing the whole new brand identity, it was an incredibly quick meeting for us because there was so much preparation done beforehand and throughout the process. That's the probably best piece of advice I can offer is surround yourself with experts who really understand brand analysis and really understand the concept of branding and what a brand needs to accomplish. And then secondly, make sure that communication is open throughout the process, that you're letting all the critical stakeholders in on the various milestones along the way. And then there are no surprises for anybody. It keeps everybody on the same page and on a very level playing field. So when the final recommendations come in, it's not like a big shock to anybody's system. You know, I thought if we had not done it the way we did it, introducing a brand new name for a 50-year-old association and a brand new logo and brand new branding identity all the way around could have been like jumping into a really cold lake. For these folks. Instead, it was like stepping into a nice warm hot tub. they were all very well prepared for it and very braced for it and very embracing of it. So that's the communication is, you know what, that's the key to almost everything we do. If we're open in our communication, even if we have varying viewpoints on things, and even if we disagree, if we're just open and honest in the way we communicate with other folks, we're going to make so much better progress.
Right. And it's clearly not just a name change. It's a real directional shift with regards to the organization. You offer Kahwa educational opportunities, and that is being changed or adjusted. And you've also added a new staff member to expand some programming. I don't know if you would like to tell us more about that, but it sounds like you're trying to reach potentially a different market than you have in the past.
Yeah, we're really excited about that advancement. I think it's probably the most exciting thing that we've done as an association, maybe in the time that I've been involved for over 30 years. We've always been known as an association that brings excellent executive level professional training to the market. But I think we've done that primarily through a couple of face-to-face conferences, and then we'll occasionally do webinars or some sort of e-learning. And with this advancement, we are really doubling down on our commitment to bringing professional development to the industry. I think there are plenty of opportunities out there to get the sort of hands-on operational level training that folks need in order to be effective at their jobs in this field. But what our niche has been, I think, from the beginning is that executive level training. It's really that sort of management and governance level education and getting beyond our own industry and thinking a little bigger and broader than that. So we have been really known for bringing to our conferences presenters who are from outside the field, who may come from corporate America and they may be doing human resources in a major corporation. And, you know, while there are certainly huge differences between doing HR for a big company and doing HR for a sheltering organization, it's all scalable. And the basic sort of proponent or components of it are really the same regardless of scale. So we've kind of challenged ourselves as an industry to think bigger. There's been a cliche that I've heard since I got into the business 35 years ago, almost now, from folks saying we need to operate more like a business. And you know, I never really fully understood what that meant. But I think through the training that we've offered as an association, we really have helped people function in a much more business-like way. You know, we're not selling cogs and gears and we're selling a mission, basically. And so there are certainly some differences in terms of what our bottom line needs to look like. But our bottom line needs to be healthy. If we're financially, it needs to be healthy. And so it's things like that. It's financial management, personnel management, all of those sorts of the legal aspects of what we do. All of those things need to be well understood and well in hand if we want to be sustainable over the long haul. And I think because of that, because we've got folks who have really availed themselves of that type of training, the industry has advanced in incredibly fast ways. If you think about where we were 40 years ago versus where we are today as an industry, I mean, 40 years ago, euthanasia as a means of population control was commonly accepted. It was the way that most communities dealt with overpopulation of dogs and cats. And, you know, nowadays, that's not acceptable to anybody anymore. We really have to look for alternatives to that. None of that would have happened had we tried to operate in a vacuum, and we operated purely based upon our emotions and our passion for animals. We also had to be smart about the way we did it and the way we managed the resources that it took to get to where we've gotten in very, very short order. And so I think the training that we offer really has helped us get there. Where we're headed now is we're really formalizing that sort of distance learning piece. It's all part of our desire to make sure that we are available and accessible to folks at all levels of the industry. So whether you are a mom and pop rescue group that just wants to be more professional, or whether you're a large organization with a multi-million dollar budget and lots of staff members in a major market, and everything in between, we want to make sure that we're offering something for everybody. And, you know, I recognized early on in this position that there are a lot of folks who are never going to come to one of our conferences. They simply don't have the time or the money or maybe the drive even to make the effort to show up at a conference. And so we thought, well, there are more efficient ways for us to deliver training. There's always going to be a place for the face-to-face conference. There's always going to be that great, I think there's always going to be a need for folks to network and to get to know each other and spend time together and share and all of that. But between those conferences, there's a whole lot more we can do. And we can avail ourselves of all manner of modern technology and training opportunities. So we have added for the first time to our team a director of professional development and credentialing. And her role with us is really to sort of develop the content that we need to deliver to folks all across the country. Even if they never want to leave their desktop, they can still get incredible training. So we're looking at content development, curriculum development, and then all the different means of delivering that training in a remote way so that folks don't have to necessarily travel to a conference to get that level of training. It's one of the most exciting things I think we've done. We've been known as a professional development association for years, and I think we're really taking great steps to earn that label and to sort of walk the talk and deliver the services that are needed out there in the industry.
Well, and the one thing that we haven't touched upon, too, that I have found with doing the podcast as well as the online cat conference that I did last January is there's an incredible amount of interest internationally in virtual learning. And so I think that that's a wonderful way for the association. I'm sure you already have an international reach, but it's just another way to get out there even more.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a few members who are scattered around the globe. We've got folks in Australia and South Africa, and obviously several Canadian members. But yeah, absolutely. I think that's the beauty of the internet is that it doesn't know those boundaries. And so it's really wonderful for folks who may have absolutely no access. If they're living out in the hinterlands, they may have no access to professional training. And if we can bring that to them in an efficient and affordable way, there's no reason in the world that the industry shouldn't be able to advance internationally as well as across the U.S. So absolutely, we're thrilled about that.
We're proud to be an affiliate of Space Kitty Express, makers of handmade, refillable catnip alternative cat toys. Think Valerian, Silver Vine, Honeysuckle, etc. for the discerning cat who wants to try something new or doesn't respond to catnip. You can even get 10% off your purchase at Space Kitty Express by using the code COMMUNITYCATS at checkout. Help your kitty blast off today with some new toys from www.spacekittyexpress.com. Did you miss the 2018 online cat conference that we held in January? Or would you like to share some of the conference webinars with friends? You can now purchase the presentations and share them with colleagues and friends. Just visit our recordings page, which is under the resources tab, to access webinars from some of the leading personalities in feline welfare today. They're sure to give you and your cat-loving friends great ideas on ways to help even more cats. Check it out at www.communitycatspodcast.com. I'm going to cycle back just a little bit back to a conversation about boards, because it's a topic that I don't cover very often, but I think it's very important. Every nonprofit has to have a board, whether you're two people or, you know, a really large organization. Here you are. You've been involved with the association for 30 years. The organization's been in existence for 50 years. You've made a dramatic change. Some would say, since you've been so involved in the organization, that you might have preconceived ideas of direction. Some might say use the term founder syndrome or something like that. And then you've also been working with your board to create this new vision. How do you recommend folks in working with a board that wants to make change? Our industry is changing with regards to cats, community cats, as our population numbers go down. Our programs need to change, or else we're going to have a tough time going forward. How does one work with a board, either just as a volunteer board or just a smaller organization? I mean, how can they make change? I hear this phrase a lot, which is, oh, well, this is what we've been doing forever. We can never make a change.
Right.
And they're going to go out of business, or they're going to have a lot of pain and suffering. What sort of advice would you give folks in that position?
Well, I tell you, I think there's an old cliche that goes evolve or die. And I think we as an industry really have to live up to that. And we really have to be willing to accept change and to accept new ways of thinking and new ways of doing things. I think that those things need to be accepted based upon data and based upon facts and real knowledge, and not just based upon emotion. Where I think I've seen boards go wrong over the long term of my career has been when they spend way too much time thinking with their hearts and way too little time thinking with their heads. I had a consultant years ago at an organization I ran who came in to work with our board. We were having some serious board dysfunction, and he came in and he said to me, and it was a profound statement. He said, "You have too many animal lovers on your board." And at first, that's kind of hard to swallow. Mm-hmm. When you first hear it, you think, wow, isn't that what we're about? But then when you sort of stop and distill it down, he was absolutely right. We had a bunch of folks who had a little bit of knowledge and who were extremely passionate without really understanding the full picture and the full context. And they weren't very open to listening to what other people had to say. And especially new folks coming in were just sort of shut out because, you know, we've always done it this way, and we should keep doing it this way because it's what's familiar. And, you know, unfortunately, no great social movement has ever advanced because because folks, you know, sort of stick to their guns and stay in the same place. You've got to be willing to hear new, fresh ideas and embrace those that work. I worked for a for-profit company for a while, and one of their corporate values was try a lot of stuff and keep what works. The only failure is a failure to try. And so I that has really stuck with me because I've always said, as long as I've been doing this, that the day that I feel like I already know it all and don't have more to learn is the day that I need to hang it up.
Yeah.
Because it is, you know, I learn new stuff every day, and we have our memberships growing constantly, and new folks are coming in, and I learn from everybody. I go to all of the state and regional conferences around the country and listen to what other organizations are doing. And inevitably, I come back feeling really refreshed and challenged because I've learned so many new things. So, yeah, the old you can't teach an old dog new tricks thing doesn't work for me. I'm definitely an old dog and I'm learning new tricks constantly. So, and boards of directors are that it's a tricky, that's a tricky thing to navigate. I think, you know, in some ways the not-for-profit governing board model is sort of a flawed model by definition. When you think about the fact that, you know, you've got an executive working within a not-for-profit who was hired because of expertise around the, that particular type of industry, and they're reporting to a group of people who really by definition know less than they do about what they're doing, and you run into problems where boards don't realize that the only power they have is as a group. They don't have really any power as individuals. They only have power as a voting group, and I think the balance of power gets all out of whack. Egos get involved and personal agendas get involved, and I've seen more organizations torn apart by board dysfunction than probably just about anything else. So I encourage folks, if you feel that happening, it's really there are plenty of outside resources, our association included, that are there to help and can really step in and help coach and counsel boards to behave properly. And they're going to be so much more effective if they do behave properly and really look at themselves as governors of an organization and not managers of an organization. And there's such a huge, profound difference between those two things.
That's a great point. And the one quote I want to pull out, what you said right at the beginning, is we are an industry. And that we is not just top management. It is everybody out there in the field.
That's
so
right.
It can be that, you know, individual who's out there trapping community cats. You are part of an industry and part of an ecosystem that can support you and help you and assist you and not be so stressfully alone, which at this time of the year, being the end of the summer, I'm getting a lot of folks who are feeling the stress, and most of them are small shops or individuals. And it's important to know that an organization like the association can help and provide some support from their resources that they have on their website. So with that, if folks are interested in finding out more about the association or the educational programs that you offer, I also noticed that your past conference is available for download so people can purchase the presentations. So if they did not know about the last conference and want to see what a conference is like, how would they find out that information?
So you can go to our website, which is theaawa.org, and the other thing to throw out there is, because we're still going through this brand transition, the old web address, sawanetwork.org, will also work. And there are tremendous resources. We have a best practices and emerging trends committee that has been working really hard to put together these huge best practice documents that are all available on the website completely free for download. And they're amazing. There's a best practice on transport of companion animals, there's a best practice on enrichment, and a best practice on veterinary care in the shelter, and the committee will continue to work on developing those. So, you know, those are just examples of some of the many resources available on the site, and our contact information is also there on the site, and if you want to reach out to me directly or to anybody on our team, that's what we're there for. We're there to really support folks. And, you know, nobody is an island. Collaboration is the name of the game, and if you're feeling lost and alone out there, you're not. And so reach out, find other folks in your area who are like-minded, and I can almost guarantee you that folks are willing to work with you to make your work a bit easier and more efficient. And there's a lot of strength in numbers, and the more we work together, the more effective we're going to be.
Jim, any last thoughts before we close out today?
I'll throw out my sales pitch for membership. If you're not yet a member of the association, I hope you'll consider joining us. We, again, strength in numbers, and the real power in our association is not in all of my brilliance. It's in the network. It's in the fact that there are a lot of folks with a great deal of collective experience and expertise who are willing and able to help you, and they're easily accessible. We've got a couple of Facebook groups that are for members only, so as a member, you can join those, and you can access 500 or so of your closest friends and get advice in real time. So if you're not yet a member, there's all kinds of information on the website about how to do that, and we hope you'll consider it.
Jim, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on my show, and I can't wait to touch base with you a year from now, find out what the next stage has been, because you've been just a busy organization over the last year, so I can't wait to see what you do next year.
It's you know what, it's constantly changing, so I have a feeling we'll have a lot to talk about, Stacey.
Thank you for listening to the Community Cats podcast. I would really appreciate it if you would go to iTunes, leave a review of the show. It will help spread the word to help more community cats.